May the words of our mouths and the meditations of all our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. Today's psalm, Psalm 84, provides, I think, a really wonderful message about what it means to be going to the temple and going to the Lord. It probably originated as a pilgrim song sung by bands of travelers heading to Jerusalem for one of the festivals. Given that joyous connection, it's no surprise that Psalm 84 is rather upbeat. You can imagine people getting more and more excited and more into this psalm as their destination, Jerusalem, starts coming more and more into their view. My soul has a desire and longing for the courts of the Lord, which are right out there. Even the birds of the air have a home there. The swallow lays her young by the side of the altars. Happy are they who dwell in your house, and happy are those whose strength is in God and whose hearts are set on the pilgrim's way. It's great. But yet, in the midst of all of that good news, that happy, upbeat message, there's a little part that could be easily and I think quickly overlooked, especially given the beauty of how we do psalms with Anglican chant. It really can get glossed over. Those who go through the desolate valley. Now that's different from the rest of the psalm. In terms of the pilgrimage to God, suddenly there's a broad spectrum of those in relationship with God and with God's temple. Those who live there, those whose hearts are set on the pilgrim's way, and even other members of God's creation, all of whom are happy. And there are those going through the desolate valley. Having been written almost about 3,000 years ago, it got me wondering, is the desolate valley a geographical place? Or is it a state of mind? Or a way of being? Or maybe all of the above? In the Hebrew Bible, the verse is translated as, they pass through the valley of Baca, which starts to sound like an actual location. The consensus among Jewish scholars is that the Valley of Baca is an unknown place on the way to the temple. Some interpret this as a particular valley where, to no surprise, Baca trees, whatever they are, grow. The key point, though, is that the necessary and vital rains in that region come in early winter, which suggests that pilgrims sung this song when traveling for the festival of Sukkah in the fall, just before the rainy season, in effect imploring God to send them early rain because the region that they're going through is rather dry and arid. So the one verse that's different from all the rest, the one that could be easily overlooked, may actually provide the clue to this psalm's origin. Climbing in and out of a valley can be enough of a struggle. Several years ago, when I walked a portion of the Camino de Santiago in Spain, there was a day that was entirely spent climbing out of one valley and going down into the next. I thought at some points that maybe I was going to be meeting my maker that day. I thought I had done the hard part When I reached the top and had gotten out of the first valley, little did I know that going down into the next was as difficult, if not harder, to do. Now add to that a lack of water. Geographically, we're talking about a tough place to be, climbing in and out of valleys, no water in sight. But it can also be a tough place metaphorically as well. To find oneself in the desolate valley, a place of struggle, spiritual dryness, sadness, a separation from others, a long distance from God, the night of the dark soul, the dark night of the soul. I recently read about an increase, particularly among young people, of what is being diagnosed as climate despair, a sense that climate change is an unstoppable force that will render humanity extinct and therefore renders life until then as basically futile and pointless. I would contend that those who are suffering from such things, they are going through a desolate valley. The current conditions in Haiti, political turmoil, lack of fuel and lack of food, everything shutting down. Our beloved partners at San Matthew valiantly trying to manage in all of this. I can't help but think that at times, Père Diègue, Kleber, the other teachers, maybe even the students themselves, have got to be thinking to themselves that this is like going through a desolate valley. And closer to home, this week I read the Gazette's front page series on families who have experienced the opioid crisis firsthand through the tragic deaths of either a daughter or a son. Talk about heartbreaking. Each family in its own way struggling through the desolate valley. There are no set paths to get you to the desolate valley. One can wind up there for a variety of reasons. Some of you have probably spent time in the desolate valley, and you know what I'm talking about. Some of you may be in the desolate valley right now. No one, and I mean no one, is immune from the desolate valley. We all can find ourselves there. In today's gospel, Jesus gives at least one example of someone who is in the desolate valley, a tax collector. We don't know much about him. We don't know why he stands apart alone by himself, why he beats his chest, or why he hangs his head and can barely get out a rather heart-wrenching confession of sinfulness and sorrow. But he does. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I can't help but think that you hear that and you just feel for this guy. It makes you wonder what's going on. As I'm sure you have heard many times, in the ancient world, being a tax collector was not like working for the IRS. It was more like working for the mafia. Starting at the top with the emperor, financial demands and expectations were set for the people below him, who in turn made financial demands on those who reported to them, and so on down the line all the way to the local tax collector, who was under obligation to turn in a certain amount of money, which then made its way back up the food chain. Anything collected above your quota was yours to keep. So as you can imagine, it was highly corrupt and resented by all. Did this man willingly become a tax collector? Is it something he wanted to do? Did he see it as a way for him to get rich quick? Did he get into tax collecting out of desperation in order to feed his family or maybe take care of a sick child? Were there circumstances that sent him into this line of work? Was he forced or coerced into collecting taxes? Was his family threatened and in danger if he refused to accept an offer that cannot be refused? We don't know what got him to where he is. And maybe we're better off not knowing the things he has done and left undone in the furtherance of collecting taxes. But something is going on here. Perhaps he has come to realize the evil he is a part of. Not just the evil of his own actions, but the evil of participating in such an awful and corrupt system. A system that hurts, damages, and ruins people. Ruins people's lives, people's families, ruins whole communities. Maybe he's developed a conscience. He recognizes how this greed and avarice system has made him into a person that he no longer recognizes. His faith, his morals, his relationship with God have been so ignored for so long that he realizes that he is in desperate need of reestablishing a moral compass within himself. Or maybe he's just reached the point where he just can't do this anymore. Whether he volunteered or was forced into it, he can't go on. And so he stands apart in his own private little desolate valley and sobs out his misery and remorse. Jesus pairs this guy, this man, with a Pharisee who presents as the exact opposite. He too stands alone, but probably because he likes it that way. His head is most likely raised up. Why? Because he boasts more than he actually prays to God. God, I am so blessed. I am so grateful that I am not like other people. Thieves, rogues, adulterers, or like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I tithe a 10% of my income. Again, we don't know a lot about this man. And I want to go lightly with him. It's tempting to criticize and fault him, but we really need to be careful doing so. Because the more we criticize the Pharisee, at least personally speaking, the more I realize I'm looking into a mirror. And it's ourselves we're condemning. Finding meaning and self-worth in judging others and separating ourselves for distinction. Luke ends the story there, telling us that the tax collector went home justified and the Pharisee didn't. That's an interesting choice of words, justified. What exactly does that mean? It doesn't mean the tax collector left feeling great or happy or necessarily better or having a sense of relief or any sense of the things we use, words we use today like closure. It means he's getting himself right with God and that he's on the way. For him, going through the desolate valley, his prayer will be answered like the pilgrims. And the early rains will come. For him, there can be springs of God's mercy and pools of God's love. With the help of God, I hope there's also reformation in his life, so that he can leave the world of tax collecting and move beyond the desolate valley and live his life like a new person. The Pharisee is stuck. I think of the Pharisee, believe it or not, is stuck in the desolate valley. Yes, He too is in the desolate valley. He just hasn't figured it out yet. Yes, he likes himself and he does some wonderful things, but there's still something missing in him, particularly something missing in his soul. That's an arid and dry place. With him, there's always something missing, starting maybe with friends. If only he were a little more humble and loving, loving of others as much as he loves himself, he too would have his prayer answered. And like the tax collector and like the pilgrims, receive the early rains, springs of God's mercy and pools of God's love. Until then, no matter what he thinks, he's in the desolate valley with an emptiness that he cannot address, an emptiness that he cannot fill, and an emptiness that he cannot comprehend. If only he let God help him, he too would be on his way to living his life like a new person. And for us, well, the truth is, and let's be honest, there's a little bit of each of these characters in every one of us. We're saints and sinners. All of us have a bit of Pharisee in us. Who among us doesn't think he or she is a good person doing good things? I mean, I hope you think that of yourself, because you are. And we are good people, though, who sometimes have moments, like everyone does, we have moments when we look with contempt on some others. It's what we do. We're humans. Think of it this way. Anyone out there who's perfect does not need saving. As Jesus said elsewhere, Jesus came for the sick, not the healthy. I like to think Jesus came for each and every one of us. And we're also like the tax collector. We all have dark places and dark times we'd rather not admit to or revisit. We all have times and places that are not either our proudest or finest moments. Times when we really did leave things undone or did things we shouldn't have done. But we're all in this together. Pilgrims. Ultimately trying desperately as we can, climbing in and out of valleys in this life to reach beautiful, beautiful Zion. And part of the journey is passing through the desolate valley. It's the part of the journey we cannot do on our own. Because on our own, we'll never get out of there. And with God, the desolate valley is never meant to be the final destination. Like ancient pilgrims traveling to Jerusalem, we need God's help to get us through the desolate valley, to send us those early rains, springs of God's mercy and pools of God's love. Like the pilgrims and like the Pharisee, we have to pray to God to send us what we need. Amen.